But if you go and talk to like Tea Party groups, underlying this is really concerned about their school districts, their property taxes. It's the stuff you can't really get away from.
I'm June Arunga for Reason TV. I'm here with Steve Malanga of the Manhattan Institute, the author of the new book, Shakedown.
What's it about?
Well, it's about the evolution over the last 40 years of what I call the big government coalition. The big government coalition consists of public sector unions and social advocacy groups, most of which live essentially off of government funding. And because of that, they are the chief advocates for bigger spending in America, for bigger government in America, not necessarily because it does good, but because it's in their self-interest to always advocate for bigger government.
Why the social advocacy groups and the unions specifically? Why did you focus specifically on these while there are other special interests?
They are the main components of the special interests. They actually started separately. The social advocacy groups were basically created in the 60s during the War on Poverty, when the architects of the War on Poverty believed that if we spent enough money, we could attack poverty and government could cure poverty. And it was well-intentioned but naive. But one of the things, they didn't really know how to do this, so one of the things they decided to do was finance and fund a lot of local community groups and a lot of local programs. And as a result, they essentially created thousands, and maybe I would say at this point tens of thousands, of groups that essentially live off of government money. And once they created this constellation, of course, it was in the self-interest of these advocacy groups to go into politics themselves and advocate for the continuation of their programs, for new programs, because that's what their existence was based on.
How prepared are the states to pay for these benefits?
Not at all. We have $3 trillion in unfunded promises that we've made at the state and local level to these employees, both for pension benefits and for health care benefits. It's really unsustainable. The state would go broke if it had to essentially finance this right out of its everyday tax funds. What you do is you squeeze out all the other kind of spending that you have to do, spending on police, spending on teachers, spending on programs for the poor. It just gets squeezed out.
Where will the money come from eventually?
Good question. In some of the worst states, Illinois, New Jersey, California, there are experts who say there's no way they will be able to pay this bill and that they're going to need some kind of a federal bailout. Many argue that if there is a federal bailout, it should come with very strict restrictions. It's going to be controversial in any way. But you could easily say that in certain states, it's hard to predict where the money will come. New Jersey is a good example. They've been struggling to balance their budget. But even though they've been balancing their budget, they've been doing it by skipping $3 billion that they need to be paying every year into the pension system. So even when they figure out how to get their budget straight in Jersey, they still have to find another $3 billion a year, which is like 15% more in tax revenues. Where's it going to come from?
Does it matter who's in office, Republicans, Democrats, or is it the same story regardless?
I think in many states it has been the same story. The problem is the taxpayers don't really have either party advocating for them. I call both parties in some states the incumbency party, because what happens is people get elected and then what they most want to do is remain in power. And if they're threatened, let's say, by a powerful special interest that could unseat them, they're more worried about that than anything else. Taxpayers need advocates, and they need to advocate for themselves. That's why you see the rise of the Tea Party movement. And I don't know what it will accomplish, but what taxpayer groups really need to start doing is find a way to be a permanent presence themselves, not just sort of come and go when taxes get high.
What has fomented the Tea Party's rise at this point in time, or is the problem just now kind of boiled over?
I certainly think that what's happening at the state and local level fomented this, and then people began focusing on the national level, and that's sort of created a national movement. But if you go and talk to like Tea Party groups, most of them come out of like local taxpayer associations, and they're very aware. Their property taxes have been going up year after year. Their income taxes are going up. That's already happened. So they kind of like are focused on that. And then all of a sudden they see this national movement and they go online and they sign on to it. And now they're also part of, you know, looking at what's happening in Washington. But if you talk to them, underlying this is really concerned about their school districts, their property taxes. It's the stuff you can't really get away from.
If the Tea Party candidates do well in the upcoming elections, does this signal the decline of this union and advocacy groups alliance?
I don't think one election signals that yet at all, because again, a lot of these Tea Party groups, in general, taxpayer groups, tend to come and go. They tend to be grassroots efforts that come and go, and this coalition is there permanently. So I think that you need more long-term structural change.
What kind of reforms do you propose?
There's a lot of what I call democratic reforms. Again, in states where that are heavily gerrymandered, I think we need to go to nonpartisan redistricting like you have in states like Iowa, so that you don't have these districts where, you know, half the state is Democratic, half the state is Republican, and you can't defeat anybody in those districts, you know. The other thing I think you need to look at is there are a lot of laws and rules, like in some states, where when the contract negotiations between unions and politicians reach an impasse, they go to arbitrators. And in some states, the arbitrators are told they're not supposed to take into consideration whether a local government can afford to pay whatever they decide their award is. Well, that's just crazy.
So is this really a long-term,
yes,
kind of long-range direction America is
Absolutely.
Facing? And it's been... It's very difficult to turn the ship. Is that what we're saying?
What tends to happen is that the momentum is slowed down every once in a while, like the tax reform movement of the late 1970s, tax reform movement of the early 1990s, where we saw some of these states put in things like taxpayer bill of rights. So it happens episodically, periodically, where the momentum is slowed down. But you know, to actually say you're turning around the ship, I'm not quite sure. We've seen that yet.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. I'm Juna Runga for Reason TV, and thank you for joining us.